Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Chuck Bonner and Julie Hayden, and this is the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. True straight up.
True straight up. We're going to talk about the primaries coming up. We're going to talk about Lauren Boebert's son and what's going on there and my big question, why now? But I want to start off with Professor Professor Janice Fiammengo. She's got a new book out, The Goddess That Failed, Feminism's Unending War Against Men, Families, and Civilization Itself. Professor, thank you so much for your time and welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show.
You have picked a subject that is near and dear to Chuck's heart. He rants about this all the time.
No, I don't. But, I call myself a feminist.
Yeah.
But Julie can attest to that.
You know, one of the things I myself am, let's just say, I'm not 42 anymore. And I remember years ago, one of my first radio jobs, there was a certain amount of money for a raise. And the news director at the time said he was going to give it to the guy because the guy was going to someday have a wife and a family. And at the time, I thought that was unfair. And I think that there was some good that came a little bit out of a feminist so-called movement. But I kind of agree with you. It's gone tragically wrong. Why don't you tell us what you think, how it started and how we got to where we are now?
Yeah, well, yes, I agree with you that people should not be paid differently for doing the same work. And I believe it has been illegal since the early 1970s to pay people differently based on sex. And so I would say that, yes, there were some moderate and reasonable feminists at the beginning of the second wave feminist movement who had moderate and reasonable goals. But I would say in general, my argument is that although there were those moderate feminists, there never was really a moderate feminism, that it was always grounded in envy and resentment and warped by by a conviction of feminist or of feminine moral superiority, and always I think warped by utopianism, the belief that there could be some sort of radical revolution that would make everything perfect, and it tended to blame everything that women objected to on men and to cast men as the enemy and to believe that the whole history of humankind was a history of men oppressing women, which is simply not true. So I think those elements of the feminist movement have carried it far past a legitimate reform movement and turned it into a quite, often quite vicious revolutionary ideology.
What about, we had this week AOC, who is, you know, a very prominent Democrat, could very well be the presidential candidate, making a big spectacle about taking video of herself. You know, she's going to freeze her eggs, even though she had just broken up with her boyfriend. I mean, do you see, and to me, there just are so many things wrong with that. And the whole idea that, I mean, she's kind of like throwing men out of the picture altogether. I mean, what do you make of that? And is this part of what you're talking about? You know, it's war against sort of civilization and families.
Yes, absolutely. And that is one of the most worrisome things about feminist ideology. And that has been there, you know, from early days. I think most people remember the slogan, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. Well, what were men supposed to think about that? And that was always an underlying angry, bitter, resentful strain in feminist ideology. Not too long ago, in 2013, there was a very prestigious debate in Toronto, Canada, with the title Resolved, Men Are Obsolete, and Four Women... Yes, four women debated the pro and con, And, you know, at the time, I just imagined to myself what would happen if four men, and these were not, you know, just obscure, crazy people. These were well-known authors and pundits. And I just can't imagine a debate in which four men stood up on stage and talked about whether women were obsolete or not. And that's right. The asymmetry in feminism is that you hear an awful lot now about how men are useless, men are inadequate, men need to step forward, men need to do more for women. And we don't hear really anything much about what women want to do for men. We certainly don't hear anything about how women need to change and improve themselves. And so, and that is one of the really worrisome things to me, is the glaring lack of empathy that a lot of women, maybe especially young women, but in general society, just the glaring lack of empathy that we have for the problems of boys and men. And there are a lot of problems. And the idea seems to be that men are either just disposable, they can do the hard work, the dirty work, the killing work. Many more men die on the job, for example, well, many, 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 it's like 98% than women. And we don't talk about that or care about it very much. And yet we're very willing to criticize men for their various alleged failings.
You know, there's a phrase called the war of the sexes, which has existed since recorded history. But it's really interesting because we have a 15-year-old son, and he's a tall, good-looking guy. And I said, you know, I said, well, you know, any attractive women you like at school? And he just holds his nose up. And he says, no. He says, they all think we suck, and we think they suck. And I was watching a movie called Idolmaker, when they have these teen idols, male teen idols, and they were singing to swooning girls, 13, 14-year-olds. And their view of what their life is going to be, and they're going to meet a, you know, an idol themselves, or at least find a boyfriend who is idol-like or everything else. And today, we're, you know, the animosity between the two sexes is enormous, just enormous. I mean, I'm just sort of surprised, and you know, our son reports, you know, the girls are the ones that are always doing the his, him, her genders and changing everything. And it's just sort of amazing. You kind of wonder, how's that going to do for
families,
future relationships and families?
Yes, exactly. And family formation is the most important thing that determines the health of our future country, obviously. And it is worrisome to see the mistrust and the animosity that I think the feminist movement has to take a great deal of responsibility for, certainly as it's been developed over the last, especially 20, 25 years. We hear terms like toxic masculinity thrown around a great deal. Well, I think, you know, young men hear that. They hear slogans like the future is female. They get the message very clearly delivered in high school and university that they bear the burden of male sin, that the whole history of humankind has been the history of men oppressing women, that their sex is responsible for everything that's wrong with the world, and the thing they should do now is take a step back and let their morally superior sisters and colleagues carry us forward into a, you know, better future. And they see that there is affirmative action and equity and diversity hiring that disadvantages them, especially if they're white men. They see all sorts of special programs for their female colleagues where they're told that, you know, where girls are told they're strong and they're great and we need to ban bossy because we want more female bosses and, you know, all of that. And so I think it does have an impact on young men's thinking about themselves and others. There was a poll done not too long ago out of the UK, and I don't know if it would be much different in North America. I suspect not. It found a huge gap in the perception of the opposite sex. Close to three quarters of the young men, this was a survey of young people under the age of 30, close to three quarters of the young men had a positive or very positive view of the opposite sex, whereas less than 50% of the young women had a positive or very positive view. And I think, you know, women get the message relentlessly that to tie themselves down, to you know, get married and have children, that that's actually a terrible deal for them, that it's going to inhibit their ability to fulfill themselves, to pursue the career success that they want. And this goes right back to the 19th century when the Marxists and the feminists who were influenced by them told women that marriage was a kind of sex slavery. A lot of websites and thought influencers encourage women to be promiscuous. They encourage women to leave their marriages if they are married. We know that 70% of marriages, 70% of divorces are initiated by women. So, you know, the encouragement to women to believe that they've been, because they've been held down for so long, they owe it to themselves now to pursue pleasure for themselves and not to feel a sense of responsibility towards men, even towards their husbands, even towards their children. And that's having a terrible impact, especially, of course, on the children. And if that's, we're not creating a society where children can flourish, then we're really failing in every most important way.
I saw an article in Free Republic that says there's no such thing as HDAD, hyper...
ADHD.
Yeah. That there is no such, you know, brain functioning run that's wrong. Some people... And we have taken, I don't know, huge number of young males, boys, because they're the ones who are always diagnosed in that way, and given them unbelievable drugs. And you know, those are your future explorers, your future people who want to go out in the world, those are the ones who had wanderlust, and all those things that human society needs. And we've drug and zombied a whole generation or several generations of young boys, saying, "Oh, that's you know, that boy would cause problems in the classroom, so let's just drug him until he conforms."
Yes. Well, that is very worrisome, and I think, you know, the fact that most teachers, certainly in the primary schools, and even going all the way up to you know, the higher grades, most teachers are women now. Often. Yes. Feminist women, they don't necessarily have a lot of interest in the perceptions and values and attitudes of young men or boys. And so I think that's part of the problem. Many of them feel that their goal as teachers is particularly to encourage the girls, and because they carry that idea that girls are the ones who need to be engaged. And many of them are feminists, and so they think that part of their role in the classroom is to emphasize the bad things that men have done to women over time. And so it certainly is not a positive space for boys. And in general, I think our culture affirms feminine values and feminine ways of being and doesn't tend to affirm masculinity really in any way. And I agree with you, Chuck. You know, we should value and recognize that masculinity is key to our civilizational flourishing. Men are, in a way that it isn't quite clear that women are, men are the builders of civilization. They're driven in a way that some women are, but in general women aren't. Yeah. They're driven to, you know, to explore, to discover, to invent, to innovate, to problem solve, to protect and provide. And women certainly have played honorable roles in the flourishing of our civilization, but women tend to do other things and be interested in other things like caring about the vulnerable and, you know, being very alert to the needs of babies and things like that. And those are wonderful things. Making a home is a very, very important thing. You need both, exactly.
One of the things that have been, you know, one of the underlying theses, and this really came up in the Jason Arday, Cambridge, youngest black professor ever case, but that all we have is one of, within the Overton window, you can only say one thing, that's all races have the exact same IQ levels, Men and women had exactly the same interests and abilities and so forth. You are not allowed to say that women do better in languages, but men do better in science and math, which doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of Madame Curies and great women mathematicians, and there aren't men who are great at languages. But in general, the two sexes do seem to have developed different abilities, at least partially on average, or close to it. It's amazing. The president of Harvard was there maybe 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, you know, was said that, you know, maybe inherently males tend to gravitate towards science and math, and they throw them out, you know, saying, no, you can't say that. You can't hold that opinion because that's outside of academic Overton window. You must say that men and women have exactly the same views or abilities on things, which is why, you know, you have the WNBA and they're kind of like, oh yeah, as long as you identify as a transsexual, then you are. If you identify as a woman, you are a woman. Therefore, you should be able to play in the league. And now some NBA players are great. When do I suit up? I'm all set.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's the, you know, you've just covered so many interrelated topics, and they're all in my book. But Chuck, that's fascinating that you mentioned Larry Summers. Can you believe, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, I think that was 20 years ago that he said that when he was the president of Harvard. And as you say, he was exiled for merely saying maybe all of this affirmative action and this breastfeeding about the fact that there are fewer women in certain of the academic disciplines, maybe it's not necessary because maybe it has to do with natural innate propensities and interests. Right. And, you know, that was absolutely not allowed. And so you're right, for at least two decades and more, we have not been allowed to talk about the fact that there are differences. There are other differences too, just in temperament and in values. Like men tend to, again, not exclusively, but men tend to value, they're really in favor of free speech, free debate, the pursuit of truth, even if that means that people's feelings get hurt. They're more interested in competition, in sort of just pure merit-driven incentives, whereas women tend to value, you know, inclusion, diversity, protecting consensus, people's feelings, all those things. That makes a difference in institutions, and institutions tend not to flourish when feminine values like making everybody feel safe predominate over the pursuit of truth. So we see all of that, you know, happening with this Jason Arday incident. And I also wanted to jump in when you mentioned about the WNBA. It's so fascinating that finally, there is starting to be a discussion about the fact that, yes, there are differences between men and women's bodies. Can we finally recognize that? And that has implications, of course, not only for the WNBA or for many of the sporting fields where men are muscling in literally on women, but in all lots of other endeavors as well, like firefighting, where standards were lower.
Military. Well, don't
the
you think
military policing? Exactly. Like, when are we going to start looking at that and talking about the implications when we have women in firefighting services who literally cannot do what they're supposed to do and are injuring themselves and endangering the lives of their male colleagues and of the people they're supposed to be serving?
Right.
Well, you know, and also the roles on rearing children. I know everybody can fulfill either role or both roles, but we have a 15-year-old son, and you know, it comes out pretty prototypically. He's a golfer, loves to play golf and so forth. And so Julie is the ever-loving mother. When he comes home and he's just had a terrible time, you know, oh, you're great. You know, it's unrequited love for the child. I'm more, and hopefully I'm not too much this, but much more, that wasn't a very good performance. What can you do better? How can you do better? You know, you've got to, as there's a saying that, mother's love is unconditional and you have to earn your father's respect.
Exactly.
And they're both
necessary.
Important and necessary. And I sometimes disagree and say, well, you know, you weren't complimentary. Then I didn't mean to be complimentary, you know. And in return, you know, when something happens, on athletics or something, Rev will ask, what does Dad think? What does Dad think? Because, you know, dads are the ones, you know, he knows what Mom thinks, which she's great. You know, he can't do badly.
Yes.
Dad, not quite so much. But those are both roles that are critical. And it always drives me insane when they say, okay, so-and-so, as this was heroic, as a single mother. You know, that's terrible. You know, Michelle Obama was claiming to be a single mother. I mean, she'd say, I'm a single mother. And you go, oh, no, you're not. You're married to
a wealthy man.
The pathetic Barack Obama. Oh, yeah. But she wanted to be, you know. She wanted to give herself that sobriquet of a heroic single mother rather than, that's too bad a child has to grow up without a father.
It's terrible. And, you know, there are feminist groups who have been lobbying the family courts and governments for decades to strip away the idea that both mothers and fathers are crucially important in their children's lives, even though all the research that they've done shows exactly what we know just, you know, intuitively, that yes, both are crucial. We need the father there. The father plays such an important role in teaching exactly what you said, Chuck, about earning respect and shrugging off failure and continuing on, and just, you know, the things that are needed to deal with difficulties in life. And of course, the mother's unconditional love is so crucial as well. And nobody would deny that, I think. But you know, so more and more the idea is that, you know, the male role in the family is to provide money. And other than that, he's quite dispensable. And in fact, the implication is that he may well be abusive. And so,
they're all abusive.
This is another thing that drives me nuts. We're too much into golf. It's because our son loves it and he plays a lot, and I played some. But I've watched all these movies, like Stick and all these other ones about these junior golfers, just because I've got a junior golfer and so on. In every one of the movies, there's only one bad person. The mother's great. The guy who is
the coming
to life, the father. The father of a junior golfer is the evil one in every movie. And I go, wait a minute. We all can't be evil. I mean, every golfing dad can't be evil. But that's how they're
betrayed. But you're right, though, in a lot of, wouldn't you agree, doctor, or professor, that in a lot of media, typically, the father is portrayed as kind of a buffoon, or is just useless, right?
Or evil.
Mm-hmm. He's either evil or he's just useless and expendable and silly. It's so nefarious. And so untrue, of course, and it is alarming that it just keeps on and on and on. And so then we hear something about how, well, young men are dropping out of the workforce, and that's bad. Well, geez, who can be surprised that when they see nothing but negative portrayals everywhere, commercials, you know, like it is relentless. And of course the woman is always good, and she's smarter, and she's more responsible, and all of that. She's got her act together. The men never do. And you know, what happened to gender equality? I thought that's what feminism was supposed to be about. You know, it's worrisome because it isn't true. And so, you know, in all sorts of, like, we have all sorts of government departments that funnel money into feminist organizations to continue pumping out the anti-male propaganda and to fund lots of programs for women and, you know, battered women's shelters, which certainly, you know, nobody objects to. Everybody wants women to be protected if they're in a bad family situation. But family violence goes both ways. There are violent women. They're not as strong as men in most cases, so overall they do less harm, but women do cause damage to their partners if they're violent. They kill their partners in some cases. Women are the majority of the killers of children, something we, you know, never talk about. And this is not to say that we should now turn against women and start tarring all of them with a negative brush. Of course not. But let's have an honest conversation about the reality of violence, of abuse, of irresponsibility, because they do happen on both sides of the aisle. And what tends to happen now, I mean, I find it really shocking, is that we actually laugh at portrayals of female violence against men, and we deny the reality of female violence against children, but we find it amusing and even satisfying to hear about men whose female partners have brutalized them. And so, again, you know, when I see that, I think, what has this to do with the idea of treating both sexes with respect and recognizing that both of them have the need to be treated as human beings? And so
one of these results, I mean, you've been reading all about all over the world except for Sub-Saharan Africa, childbearing rates are just dropping.
Oh, yeah.
Dropping. And these huge numbers are one. And I think all the things we've been talking about all
contribute
to that, where all of a sudden, you know, does an 18-year-old, 20-year-old, 22-year-old woman want to have a child? No.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. And of course, you have till 33, unless you're AOC and you freeze your eggs and so forth. But
right.
After 33, it becomes more difficult. But the world is really going to...
At some point, you're going to have to realize, oh, maybe we do need families to do that.
Yeah. I know.
We have taken a great deal of your time, but you've been wonderful. I always like to just ask this. So The Goddess That Failed, Professor Janice Fiammengo, where can people get your book?
Oh, they can get it anywhere that they buy books. It's on sale at Amazon and, you know, all of the other sites. So, I'd be very pleased if I could spread the word about the book, because I really hope that maybe we're at the beginning of a turnaround where people are starting to see how blatant the propaganda is and how it is harming everything that matters in our civilization. Not to mention, of course, also just, I think, in general, making women very unhappy. Every survey, you know, I mean, women don't look happy, especially like progressive women who sort of adopt, you know, left-wing politics. We can see them out there in the streets. They definitely do not look satisfied.
They do not look
happy. All you have to do is look at Michelle Obama. Is Michelle Obama?
All
right. Yes. Thank you so much.
She looks very angry.
She does. Hey, thank you for your time, and thank you for the work and your book. It's a great topic. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. I love speaking to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. The Goddess That Failed there, you know, and one of the things you got to wonder, and hopefully it's changing. I saw today, first you look at like DNI, former DNI Tulsi Gabbard, quitting her job to stay with her husband, who was going through, dying. Right. Right. And at a time that would have been considered traitorous. Yeah. Carolyn Leavitt today, the White House press secretary.
The greatest secretary in the White House ever.
In the history of the universe, who clearly enjoyed it. And she said she had her second baby, and she said, you know, it didn't take me long to realize that I cannot be the kind of mother I want to be with the kind of hours that I have to put in here. And the president, so you see women like that, and rather than being castigated and, you know, she's a traitor and everything like that, people are like, you know, good. And here's what I like is good for her and good for a world that creates a setting where she has a choice, right? Where she can make that choice. Right. And so hopefully maybe things are changing.
It's amazing.
You want to talk real quick about the primary? Not real quick, but about the primaries. So
they're shocking. They're shocking on each side. I mean, there was the biggest shock of the night. It was a 22-point favorite, Hong in Wisconsin, lost to Crowley.
The socialist, the DSA.
DSA. And even among the DSA, it's more wacky than the DSA. But what's amazing about the whole thing is the polls were showing 22-point lead, 20-point lead, 11-point lead, 12-point lead. I mean, it's just amazing, the polls. And primaries are hard to poll, because a lot of states, you don't even register according to parties. You know, you can vote And I'm not sure about which way.
Yeah, Jacob's saying, what does he think went wrong? You know, I wonder if, I'm not sure. Some of the people or some of the stuff I read said she was just too wacky, even for progressives. Now they're saying that the election was rigged. All of a sudden now, we have rigged elections on the Democrats, from the Democrats.
Yeah, for rigged elections.
Right, I mean, polling to be that wrong, who knows? But you know, she's out. But on the other hand, the wacky DSA person is in Minnesota. Right.
Yeah.
And so, which is probably good because he's going to.
And there was some last night where DSA or far left progressive people overcame kind of moderate establishment Chuck Schumer like ones. I mean, Chuck Schumer
had a bad night.
Chuck Schumer ever has are bad nights these days. Yeah. I mean, everything is. Wait, what did I ever do to everybody?
No, everyone hates me.
Yeah, why does everybody hate me so much?
You know, we've talked about this before. It's going to be very interesting to see how things go in the general. But I think, you know, Michelle Tafoya, who is the Senate candidate in Minnesota, mm-hmm. the Republican candidate, I think probably has a pretty good chance. But Minnesota's wacky. You know what I mean? It's like they've got, you know, they have Tim Walz as their governor, for Pete's sakes. And, you know, I don't know.
Well, Minnesota, you know, it's always had a progressive tradition to it. It's a Democratic farmers, workers party and stuff. But it has the same thing as everywhere else, you know, the urban rural divide. I mean, you know.
Good point. The inner cities.
Yeah, the western part of the state is extremely Republican and conservative, but the eastern part of the state,
which is a massive
cities,
right,
and they have a large Muslim population,
right.
And so it's been close or getting closer at times, but it hasn't gone, and who knows well this time or not.
Well, in Wisconsin then too, it'll be again to see how this all plays out. But you know, the Democrats, I'm sure, will pretty soon quit complaining about the rigged elections when they have to get back when they get back to rigging them, right?
Well, the progressives, okay, we know we helped you rig the election.
Right, so we know they're rigged.
Yeah, we know they're rigged, and now you're using it against us. That's not fair.
So we'll have to see what happens. On that though, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Lauren Boebert situation. And, you know, we're not.
All right, here's my final conclusion on Lauren Boebert. You have to know, and this is the one we're going to have about conservatives being the stupider of the two groups. What Democrats do, and they did it with Dan Mays Western Slope conservative that was going to.
Scott somebody.
Yeah. So they figure out, they look at his stuff at a college and decide that, you know, he paid somebody to semi-plagiarize him. Now, if that's a Democrat, nobody cares. You know, okay, so I paid him, you know, big deal. But Republicans are, Scott McGinnis. And they're, we can't have somebody who paid somebody and they kind of plagiarized them. No, you know, we're shocked. And of course, the Democrats never give up on their guys, but they always. Lauren Boebert's polls had been not good in her district. And so the Democrats went back and said, look, what about our son? Can we get him re-indicted? And that's what I think this is.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Because I've done a little, and I can't find, and I'll continue to look, the actual affidavit. So if you read the headlines, they make it sound like Lauren Boebert's son is running some sort of child pornography website or something like that. That's what that's sort of the implication they're giving. And from what I've been able to read and determine, what actually happened, this all was in 2024 when he was 18. And the girl involved with him was 17, 2 weeks shy of her 18th birthday, right? So apparently there is a group of, and I'm going to guess they were probably high school kids, because at the time many of them were juveniles, and a handful. We're not talking this massive ring. I think we're taping video. No, they don't use tape anymore. They were, you know, they were taking pictures of themselves having sex. It appears everything was consensual. Everybody knew it was being taped. And they were putting some of it on an Instagram account, and it was being shared. the tape that Lauren Boebert's son made with this girl was never shared on the Instagram accounts, right. But it was shared amongst peers,
the group.
And the girl herself acknowledges now that she shared it with other people too. So, and then in 2024, somehow or another, her ex-boyfriend, somebody shared it with him, right? It wasn't posted on a social media account. That upset her. So she went to the police and reported this to the police. At the time, she made it clear she had shared it. Everything was consensual. She didn't want Tyler prosecuted because he would get in trouble. And you can kind of see, and this is just me reading between the lines, and some people may disagree with me, but this sort of sounds like teenagers behaving very badly with cell phones. And it sounds like this happened in about a several week period of time. Right. I'm going to bet the cops, parents, people got involved. Everybody was punished to a certain extent. And that at some level, a decision was made. I mean, I don't even know how you would prosecute it. How could you prosecute Tyler for distributing child pornography? So it all went away, right? So, and nothing, hopefully all the kids were talked to, got straightened out. And now all of a sudden he's arrested for it. Now no one else is. Well, I guess other juveniles were arrested too. So he's arrested for it. And I'm like, well, what changed? You know what I mean?
Politics.
It's like,
my guess is politics.
Well, to me, that's the only explanation.
I saw the story. I don't know, Gateway Pundit or maybe it was Breitbart and so forth. Republicans typically just find, just like, you know, they did to Scott McGinnis. If Scott McGinnis had been a Democrat, that would have been nothing. Instead, they, you know, all the Republicans are going, oh, no, I'm more pure than that. I wouldn't give, you know, well, let's get another one. And then they just crush themselves. Scott McGinnis had a good chance of winning that election against Hickenlooper. And instead, the Republicans killed him. Based on Democratic operatives doing opposition research.
It's got to be a Democrat operative, right? And this comes on the heels of news coming out that the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee has decided that the Boebert seat is in play.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
it's come out within days of and I imagine in this time, in this small community, at the time when this happened 2 years ago, 2020, more than 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago anymore, this was probably fairly common high school gossip knowledge, right, would be my guess. And so somebody somewhere decided to use it. That's it. And again, I'm not a Lauren Boebert fan, but this just seems...
I'm not.
And to me, I think what's unfortunate is these kids were probably dragged, and now they're all going to be dragged through this again.
Yes.
And again, you look at it, and it makes it sound like they're all running some child porn...
Criminal ring.
Right, criminal ring and benefiting from it. It just sounds like kids behaving very badly. But why now? And I haven't seen anything and there isn't. And I think it's, and again, this is the kind of thing you hate about Democrats. They don't care who they destroy, right?
Oh, God, no.
They don't care that Tyler, because I think clearly Lauren Boebert's son went through a rough time back then. There was some other stuff going on. So that all gets brought up again. There hasn't been anything since, and he appears to have cleaned up his act. And same thing with this girl, right? Now they're going to all be dragged through all of this. The girl who didn't want to press charges before is now, I don't know how you force her to testify. Maybe you don't. And that's the thing too, right? You got to wonder what happens come November with all of this, right?
Boebert loses and it's all forgotten.
Goes away, yeah.
Jacob asks, what happens if Boebert's son leans left? Doesn't matter. All they care about is
getting rid of her.
Getting rid of her.
They think
get rid of her. What happens to him is irrelevant. He's just a tool.
Right. And it allows them to bring up all of the things. And
well, she's white trash. The whole family's white trash. But this time, it's solely because in the kid, I don't know, probably a shitty kid. I don't know, but he's really getting screwed. Yeah, really good school.
Yes, because if there wasn't enough then, and again, I don't think they even care whether there's enough now. The whole thing is to make her look bad.
Yeah.
And again, without any regard to the truth or justice or anything like that.
Politics.
Well, and then speaking of politics, this I think is also kind of interesting. So the U.S. Attorney in D.C., Jeanine Pirro, has convened a special grand jury on the Reflecting Pool case. Now, you know, I guess maybe Trump like held her head underwater till she.
Yeah.
So my sense is that what happened, and now everybody wants to. My sense is so Trump is taking heed, the Democrats hate that he's cleaning up D.C. So he cleans up the reflecting pool. He says how great it is. And then all of a sudden it starts having all these LD problems. And was it the contract or was this? And they catch some guy allegedly tampering with it. They arrest him. They do a grand jury indictment. They indict him, right? And then Jeanine Pirro backs off and says, well, no, we don't have any evidence, so we're going to drop the charges. And Trump freaks out. Here's the problem I have with this. This is stupid.
Stupid politics.
It's stupid politics. We were talking about this. It's like, I don't know if this guy was messing with the reflecting.
I don't really care a lot.
Yeah. And the overall scheme of things, if you're going to be criminally charged for, like, I don't know what, throwing soap or whatever or food coloring in the reflect. It was worse than that. Granted, a lot of money was spent. Or was it the contractor? And how do you prove either way? Because now the contractor is going to get dragged in. Trump should just ignore this. No one cares.
He can't help himself.
I know. Well, that this is, and you're right, this is kind of the fatal, not fatal, but this is a Trump flaw, right? Yes. He should have realized, number one, probably 90% of the people out there could care less really about the reflecting pool and are probably happy that it looks nice, right?
Sure.
The other 10% of the rabid anti-Trumpers who hate anything and everything he does,
right.
And no matter what you do, you're not going to change their minds. So he should have just cleaned it up and then dropped it, right?
Well, when she said, we don't have enough for charges and let it go, but he didn't because you can never let any shiny object go. He just
right.
can't do it. So, you know. He can't. He doesn't have anything to say about Iran these days. So boom.
Right. Yeah. Well. Yeah. And I think, and this is going to go badly because I guess she already dropped the charges, so there isn't any new evidence. And I think her point, at least from the stuff I saw, she was furious at the Interior Secretary because I think that was him, right? Bergen. Yeah. Because she was saying he was the one who was making it sound like it was his evil plot,
rather
than wanting to take responsibility for his contractor screwing it up, right?
Yes.
And so he was the one yelling, leaning on the president. And all of a sudden, Jeanine Pirro was kind of left with this mess without any evidence. And, you know, but I think she probably learned, here's what she should just do. She should shut up now, too. She should have at the beginning. She should have read the tea leaves and been like, I'm sorry. I know this is terribly unjust, but we're just going to have to criminally charge you.
Which is what, once again, our favorite friends, the Democrats, do. And they always say, we'll leave it to the jury.
Right.
The jury appears. And I think they're not guilty. They can say that.
This is all Anna Bailey. I don't know why she didn't just say that. Why she didn't, I understand she's probably trying to do the right thing.
Oh, you can't do that in Washington.
No.
What is she thinking? Oh, you know, she should do the right thing. There's not enough evidence. I should, no,
This is Washington, D.C. This is a reflecting pool, for God's sakes. She should have just, I hate to say it, but the grand jury indicted the guy. She should have gone ahead, let the jury clear him, and then it would have all gone away. Then,
then
she could say, hey, it's a Washington, D.C. jury. What do you expect?
Well, it's, you know, not my fault.
So,
criminal lawyer trial. Who knows?
Nobody called me for advice on that, but that would have been my advice about all of that. Just charge the guy. Only the Democrats worry, or only Republicans worry about whether it's just or not. He was going to get off. And so if we have to sacrifice the poor,
family, the wealth, their whole lives are destroyed.
So,
who cares?
You
got to be tough in D.C.
Yeah.
Rents need not apply.
Get those poor January 6th prisoners. So, because my guess is now that's not going to go badly, because now everyone's going to, it is going to go badly, because everyone's going to keep covering it.
Well, it's going to be, you know.
She's going to have to charge him, and then it's going to be like, well, how come you didn't charge him in the first place? It's going to be a mess. It's going to be a mess. So, and she's probably learned. From now on, she'll be like, you know, in deciding who she charges, she might have conversations with people beforehand, I don't know, rather than just trying to do the right thing. But back to, you know, the whole Boebert thing and, you know, and the progressives and stuff, it's still, I don't know how much in play, again, because the Democrats play tricks like that, right? Boebert's seat is in play, and then they launch all these attacks on her.
Well,
maybe
it's in
play, maybe
she has no friends anymore. She has no friends. Trump said, God, somebody should challenge her too late because, you know, made the comment, maybe he wanted to, but she'd already won the primary. So Trump fans don't like her. I don't like her. You don't like her.
People in Weld County don't like her.
The moderates don't like her. The grassroots don't like her. So she's very vulnerable.
Victor Marx likes her. But, I mean, that's kind of a, I'm not sure what's going on there because, I mean, you know, the whole Victor Marx thing, I don't think that's a, I don't think you're going to ride his coattails anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, everybody else has kind of shut up about it, and she's standing by him.
Now, well, it makes gives her more, you know, populist.
My sense is Lauren Boebert doesn't do anything that she doesn't think isn't good for Lauren Boebert. So somewhere her calculation is that she thinks that that's going to help her somehow. Right. I don't think it's going to. On the other hand, though, I was talking with somebody today. I don't mind, just kind of final here, Victor Marx has been saying he's getting kind of hammered by the liberal media for he's not going to go to Channel 9's debate.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, again, not a Victor Marx fan, but good for him. Good for him for saying, Channel 9, you and Gawk, you guys are pieces of you
shit.
Know what? Yeah. Why would I want to do a debate? All you do is trash me constantly. Why wouldn't it be like, oh, okay, I'll let you guys ask me the questions in a debate.
But if you thought about it more, his best performance, the reason that he kind of won, and it was very close, is because Kyle Clark made a fool of himself and attacking him and endlessly attacking him. I mean, I would go on Channel 9 if I was him. Let him blast you.
Well,
let him go.
And see, because he's probably pretty good. And Phil Weiser,
a disgusting human being. Just foul beyond all belief.
Yeah, I think in a way I was kind of glad to see Victor Marx do that because Republicans do, I think, need to stand up, and they have been doing a better job saying, no, all you're going to do is trash me and hurt me, so no, I'm not going to agree to your terms. I'm not going to, you know, and although then Victor Marx did pose a completely unrealistic, you know, debate scenario where everybody gets to kind of have long form answers, which realistically is probably a decent way to do it, but no one would watch it and they'll never let him. So we're getting closer. We'll see. Any final thoughts here before we?
No, but I do want to, you know, next time we're going to delve more into Jason Arday and Nathan Kaufman. And it really is a turning point. This is a cultural turning point where all of a sudden it's topics that you couldn't talk about before. You couldn't even raise them without being totally blown out of the water or being raised. Is that going to change things? Maybe.
It can't hurt.
Yeah.
Well, that will do it for us, everybody. Thank you. Have a great weekend, and we'll see everyone on Monday.